The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
It's the final countdown to the primaries, and that means there is no shortage of things to talk about on the Political Breakfast this week. Hi, I'm Dennis O'Hare. I'll be your host, bringing you opinions from the left and the right. And with just days to go before next week's primary elections, we'll look at how the races at the top of the major party tickets for Georgia governor are shaping up. Former Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed apparently withheld information about a federal subpoena from city council and the public. We'll talk about what those implications are. And a major credit agency has weighed in on what could happen if voters decide to create that new city of Eagles Landing, taking part of the city of Stockbridge to do it. Our lineup is a little different this week. We're joined by Democratic strategist Theron Johnson, and doing his best impression of Republican strategist Brian Robinson, we have one of his former bosses, former Georgia Congressman Republican Lynn Westmoreland. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you.
Good to be here.
Good morning, Dennis.
All right, let's take a look at these two primaries. Let's start with the Democrats. Theron, some new poll numbers out. They are showing Stacey Abrams, for the first poll that we have seen, above that magical 50%, which in a two-person race, you know, you're not going to have a runoff anyway, but it gives her some cushion, doesn't it?
It sure does. And we've seen now upwards to maybe three public polls that have shown Stacey Abrams gaining a little bit of a lead on her opponent, Stacey Evans. But the one consistent fact in these polls is that there's still a large number of undecideds, and it's double digits. And so if Evans has any chance of trying to win this race, she has got to make sure that she's got a strategy that's appealing to these undecided voters, which of whom many are actually women. But right now, if you're Abrams with 4 days left to go in the election with these poll results, you can't relax. You still got to run your campaign.
Well, you have to really focus on turnout.
Anything can happen. But I keep saying this. At the end of the day, polls don't vote. People do. And so as we see early vote numbers and we know that there's going to be a large turnout, I still think that this race is still wide open.
But if Stacey Abrams is above 50%, that means if this poll is right, even if all the undecideds break for Stacey Evans, if all of Stacey Abrams' voters turn out, she's in good shape.
Right. And so, again, the number one thing that we've got to look for is turnout. If Stacey Abrams can turn out her identified voters, which many of whom we see in this recent poll numbers, then she will be the Democratic nominee for the governor of Georgia. But also, if Evans is able to turn out her ID voters and get the majority, pretty much two-thirds of them, to break her way, then she has a good chance of being a Democratic nominee for governor.
Has there been any negativity in that campaign?
Mostly about the Hope Scholarship, the vote back, you know, a few years ago to reduce some of the coverage of the Hope Scholarship because of the financial crisis it was in at the time. That's pretty much been the main bone of contention. They've also argued about voting rights, for instance. But
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes and people hate negative campaigning. They say they do, but that's what moves the needle. And I didn't know had there been either, you know, from one side or the other. And it may be if Stacey Evans did want to do that, it may be a little bit late in the game to be trying to persuade folks by negative advertising.
But are you thinking if the polls are right again, that that's her only hope?
I do. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what I would say.
Well, there was a little bit of a negative shot from the Evans campaign. They put up an ad with an African-American student in Georgia who basically said that Stacey Abrams teamed up with the Republican leadership that supported a bill that cut Hope Scholarships for African-Americans across the state upwards to 90%+. Now, Abrams responded aggressively through super PACs. With sort of a counter ad saying, you know, this is just not true. Evans is not being honest. But then Evans came back and doubled down on it recently with an ad that's up on African American radio now all across the state, sort of re-emphasizing this point around hope. But besides the back and forth on hope and a little bit in the beginning with some stories from AJC about some of Stacey Abrams' financial dealings, dealing with the IRS, owing the IRS some debt, having some liens, it really hasn't been that negative.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, evidently Stacey Evans is warm. Here's who I am. Here's my family background, and this is where I've come from. Didn't resonate, I guess, like she thought it would, especially with women.
They also, and we've talked about this before, Congressman, they have to make sure that however this primary comes off, that the party is united for the general election, because they still remember what happened when Kathy Cox and Mark Taylor, some years ago now, basically tore each other apart. And that paved the way, in part, for the election of Governor Perdue.
Well, I trust me, from my experience with the Democratic Party, they will be together. I mean, they make up a lot better than Republicans do.
Well, I think the one thing that's sort of encouraging for Evans is this, is that we know that from looking at early vote numbers that it's not exceeding past numbers in gubernatorial elections. And quite frankly, it's barely on track to meet some of the enthusiasm we saw in presidential elections. And so while we know that African-Americans are not all voting for Stacey Abrams, Evans has sort of tapped into a little bit of that base for her. The challenge is, and to the congressman's point, is that what makes Abrams really difficult to beat is not only the fact that 60% of the people who are going to turn out on Tuesday, May 22nd, to vote in the Democratic primary are going to be African Americans, but there's also a opportunity for Evans to really sort of pick away some of the liberal white progressive vote in the metro area that Abrams and Evans right now are kind of splitting. But what I would tell the Evans campaign, and I think the congressman is right, is not only go negative, but also do something that appeals to these disaffected Republican suburban women who quite frankly are not that impressed with what they're seeing from all these men who are running for governor on the right. Try to see if you can do something to appeal to them, because they can go pull a Democratic ballot for this election.
Yeah, and one other quick thing. If you look at Pennsylvania, in some of the state House seats that were won up there by women, they took the Bernie Sanders socialist approach. And I know that doesn't work in Georgia. Well, I wouldn't think so. And I know that both the Stacey's have stayed away from that thing. But there's probably a lot of Democrats out there that's waiting on somebody to go in that direction.
Well, I think Abrams is pretty close to it, Congressman. You know, you and I talked about this before we aired. I mean, people forget months ago we were talking about Stacey Abrams, and it made national news that she was talking about sandblasting Stone Mountain. And so good old Jay Bookman, who's been a columnist for the AJC for many, many years, wrote a column this week saying that issue may be something that these independent voters in the state may not find very welcoming if she makes it to the general. But it's something that I think fires up the left and kind of gets people motivated.
Let's look at the Republican side now. Congressman, full disclosure up front, you are not being paid by the Cagle campaign. You have supported him, though.
Yes.
And it's hard to find a Republican who hasn't picked a dog in this fight.
Yeah.
So let's take a look, though. Again, the poll numbers showing Casey Cagle making it to a runoff, but really having a little trouble breaking that 50% plus one that he needs to make it without a runoff.
Right. Yeah, and you can't have the quality of candidates that really is in that race. I mean, you got two military guys, Hunter Hill and Clay. Clay Tippins. And they've had the money to do some advertising and some TV. And Brian, you know, kind of, within the last couple of weeks with some of those commercials, whether you like them or you don't like them, they've made national news. And Casey's just kind of stuck to the traditional, here's what I've done and here's what I want to do type of ad. And so it's just hard to get in it without a runoff. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But since the Democrats aren't going to have a runoff, it's going to make the Republicans empty their war chests more going into a general election.
And force them to attack each other for another few weeks while the Democrats have time to at least make peace if they want to.
Absolutely. Right. And, yep. And the thing that I think the Republicans are really trying to figure out now, to the congressman's point, is that this race, from these recent poll numbers, looks like it's definitely heading to a runoff, possibly between Cagle and Kemp, and maybe even Hunter Hill and Cagle. But more importantly, they're going to spend 9 weeks of basically tearing each other's heads off. I mean, when I tell you all the national money that's going to flow in here, all the amount of money, the PACs, all these independent expenditures that many people haven't seen, all these different entities are going to engage in this Republican race. But I must say this, and, you know, the congressman and I, we're going to mix it up a little bit today. I have never seen such a race to the right. I mean, Republicans who are running for governor has redefined rock bottom when it comes to politics in Georgia. And let me be more specific. When you have a state senator riding around a metro area in a bus that we've also just recently found that it had misspelled words, going around in towns like Clarkston and others saying that I'm going to round up these illegals, and you got Brian Kemp, who's come up with a very clever commercial, who has a pickup truck saying, you know, I'm going to go use this pickup truck to ride around Georgia and pick up all these illegals, and then look into the camera with this smirk and say, yep, I just said that. I mean, this is Trumpism at its finest in Georgia. And I just really never thought I would see today that Republicans in this state would go that far to try to get elected in a Republican primary.
The deportation bus, by the way, is the campaign vehicle of Senator Michael Williams, just to identify who that candidate is.
Yeah.
Congressman, obviously you have to make the general election in order to win it. But do you think that general election voters, whom the Republicans will increasingly need in an increasingly diverse state, are going to be turned off by this? Or by November, will everybody have forgotten this?
You know, it's hard. I mean, as I've said before, as Theron was talking about, you know, the Republicans running to the right. When you look at it nationally, and not so much with the two Democrat candidates here in Georgia, but your bait, all the Republicans are pushed to the back of the end zone. I mean, you have to get so far right to come out of a primary. And the Democrats, you have to be so progressive to come out of a primary that you're in the back of your end zone and all the work gets done between the 40s. And so what you have to do, and I'm not a political consultant, but you have to win the primary, but you got to leave yourself enough space to get back to within the 40-yard line. And that's hard to do sometimes, especially when you get as far out as to have a bus that looks like a prison bus that's going around, you know, picking up people to deport them. That was a little extreme.
Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle and Secretary of State Brian Kemp also has really doubled down on this perception that is not a reality, that as they reference them as illegals, which they should be referenced as undocumented immigrants.
Well, they are illegal.
Yeah, well, but the correct term is undocumented.
The politically correct term is undocumented.
But they also want us to believe that the primary source of our gang problem in Georgia, and we do have a gang problem mm-hmm. in Georgia, but the primary source are these undocumented, and as a congressman likes to reference them, as illegal immigrants. And there was an AJC article that came out recently that said that that is not the primary source of our gang problem. And so there's a lot of misdirection and deceptive messaging that's going on, but
that would never happen in a political campaign.
Right. But I think that here's going to be the challenge. Once the nominees are selected, then I totally agree with Congressman Westmoreland that the fight is in the middle. There is roughly about almost a million voters out there right now who are probably not going to be that enthused to vote in this primary.
They won't vote in the primaries, right. But they might vote in the general.
But they're going to vote in the general. And then once the two nominees are selected, everything that's been in these commercials, radio ads, digital buys, are all going to be a part of the research. And both candidates are going to exploit one another on those issues that they took during the primary.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, if you look at South Georgia and you take the farmers or the construction industry or some of these other industries that count on migrant labor, and whether it's the H-2A or H-2B or whatever.
The visa programs.
The visa programs that come in, they're like, okay, you want to deport all these guys. We're having to pay tons of money to get here. Why, rather than putting off for this much effort towards that, why not say you're going to solve the problem? I mean, that's what people are looking for, is a solution to the problem. And we've been fighting that for a while, and nationally they can't get to it. But
yeah, isn't that the problem for the candidates, though? It's a problem and an opportunity, because the candidates can say, I'll do this and I'll do that on immigration, knowing that the real
right.
answer has to come from the federal government.
Absolutely.
So they can say anything they want.
Absolutely.
Right. And we have not heard anything from this administration or this Congress that has put forth anything that is going towards a true immigration reform package. And that's the beauty of putting up these 30 and 60 second ads, because the Republicans are saying that the solution is for us to, quote unquote, round them up. But we all know that that's not the long-term solution to how we deal with our immigration challenge in this country.
Well, that would have been the solution if we'd done it 20 years ago.
Right.
But you can't let people come into this country and hide in the shadows and pay taxes and, you know, buy homes and get married and have kids and stuff. We should have done this drastic stuff a long time ago. Now, I'm not for anybody coming into this country illegal, don't get me wrong, but I do know that sometimes you have to fix a problem with what you've got to work with. And this problem got broken a long time ago, and everybody just didn't want to see it.
Yeah, but I know we're trying to move on to the next thing, but Congressman, what really bothers me is that we are Americans, and we are a country that was founded on religious freedom and is a country that benefited from all of us migrating to this country. Mm-hmm. Many of our ancestors, your ancestors and my ancestors, migrated to this country illegally and undocumented hundreds of years ago. But I think the defining fact is that those who are here, are they on a pathway towards legalization? Are they actually here on with the intent to become citizens? Are they here to become productive citizens to our society? And I think that, yes, we do have illegal, we do have undocumented people who are coming into this country
You're
illegally.
You're getting right now,
to,
illegal.
No, to harm Americans. And I want to say as a Democrat that if people are undocumented and illegally trying to enter this country to harm Americans, then we definitely make sure we keep those people out. But we also got to make sure that this problem is just not sort of targeted at one particular country, at just Hispanics or just Mexicans. I mean, it's people who migrate and come to this country, you know, undocumented from other continents in the world. And so it's just this huge focus on this particular sector of people.
But Theron, it just so happens that the southern border is the funnel, whether you're coming from China, Africa, you know, Guatemala, wherever you're coming from, that southern border is the most porous. And I think that's why we have got to seal the border, I think, before we can make a really educated decision about what to do with the people in here. Because as long as you keep coming across the border, you can't fix the problem. And we have got to have something to stop that.
And we'll be back with more on The Political Breakfast. Great to have you along. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Moving from the state primary elections to City Hall, Theron, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution coming out with a story this week that indicated that in the AJC's reporting, former Mayor Kasim Reed basically blocked access to a subpoena aimed at looking into allegations of what was going on at the airport. Not only, according to the paper, did the mayor block media access to that, but the city council didn't know that when they were voting on some airport contracts. And this comes along at a very difficult time for Mayor Bottoms as she tries to establish her own identity.
Yeah, this is very unfortunate for former Mayor Reed. This is a man who many would say had a very successful tenure as mayor, had 8 years of just great economic development, did a lot to move the city forward with his partnership with the state, and really continued the long history of Atlanta being this great international city. And, you know, got a lot of credit for how he handled the budget and didn't raise taxes. This recent news is very unfortunate. It's unfortunate first and foremost for Mayor Bottoms, because she should be focusing on telling the people of the city of Atlanta about the basic services that she's providing to them, to try to make sure that people know that she's truly doing something about potholes, letting people know that the cash bail new program that she put out is working, giving people a reentry program to the city of Atlanta once they've come out of jail and served their time. And then more importantly, to really talk about how she's opened up the city by basically saying that she's going to go as far as she possibly and legally can to be as transparent as she can. And so this new development is very unfortunate, and it's something that Mayor Reed said that he obtained a legal advice from an outside counsel that suggested to him and his cabinet at the time that this particular subpoena was not something that they needed to turn over for the open records request that did come from the media. But one of the things
that the city council, at least according to people like council president at the time, Caesar Mitchell, said they didn't know about it either when they were voting on contracts.
Well, and I think that, you know, we don't have enough time to educate our listeners on the true form of government, the city of Atlanta. But I will tell you that two things did happen. Number one, when the federal investigators asked for the subpoena information to be turned over to them, that information was given to them. When the press submitted the open records request for subpoenas, all but this one was submitted to them. And so what happened is that the press, through a source, was told to go back and submit an open open records request and ask for this specific
subpoena.
And because Mayor Bottoms is all about transparency, she immediately turned over the subpoena. The last thing I want to say is this. A lot of these contracts that were asked for in this subpoena were not contracts that were originated during the Reed administration. A lot of these contracts that they asked for construction and retail, food and beverage contracts at the airport, were contracts that were awarded during the Franklin administration. The problem is, Dennis, is that these are some 4, 6, 8, 10-year contracts that were rebid during Reid's administration that right now are sitting on Mayor Bottoms' desk. So the reason that these contractors are again getting sort of unfairly put in AJC stories and on television is because until they actually award the bids that went through a procurement process to these new vendors or the existing ones, then the council and the city of Atlanta are extending these contracts. And so I want to be very clear. I'm not defending the behavior of this former administration to not give a subpoena to the press that was clearly requested in open records. But what I am trying to do is clarify that this was not something that was aimed primarily at companies. It was aimed at three other city individuals, Miguel Southwell, who was the general manager of the airport, Joanne Macrina, who was the commissioner of the watershed, and also Adam Smith. And the thing that
he was
I think,
the procurement officer.
And I think the one thing that that Mayor Reid probably wants a lot of folks to know is that they did cooperate with the investigation. And as we are sitting here, Dennis, people are actually in jail right now. People are serving time or getting ready to serve time because of the cooperation from the city of Atlanta with the federal investigation in the bribery scandal. So is it bad for his legacy? And is it a dark cloud over the city of Atlanta? Absolutely. But I believe that this mayor will get through it and will continue to unite his city and move forward together.
Well, you know, the people that are in jail were under the Reid administration. So you can go back. I think it actually goes back probably to Maynard Jackson when he was mayor and some of these contracts were bid and then
yeah,
just—
Yeah, because these are long-term contracts. These,
yeah, these
and
are—
And they come up for renewal.
Exactly. And so, as Theron said, it could be a 10-year contract. So, you know, one renewal period, that's 20 years. And I do think if the mayor did turn over the information to the federal government about the subpoena, is that what led to some of these arrests? Is the information on the subpoena about the airport? Because that's what it looks like to me was a couple of those arrests was due to some type of contract. And then you've got the other thing where the two guys have admitted to bribing.
These are two contractors who made federal plea deals.
But that was done in the last 8 years. That wasn't on a contract that had been renewed. These were on new contracts.
Well, yes and no, because if you look at the two individuals who actually have pled guilty and who will serve or is serving time right now, it's a confluence of existing and their intent to bid on new contracts. And let's not forget, Congressman, some of these contracts that were in question were emergency management contracts when the city had unexpected circumstances. But
snow, for instance.
Right. But let's you know, one of the things that we like to do on this show is let's just really talk about what the public's talking about. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate question that keeps coming back, is there any there? And let's just go a step further. Is there any there when it comes to former Mayor Reid? And I think that, unfortunately, public perception that's being sort of driven by media always sort of gives this allure that there could have been possible some wrongdoing and corrupt behavior by the mayor. But I want to say this, that the mayor has yet to be subpoenaed. He has not been indicted, and he has not been convicted of anything. But there are attempts through records that we now are seeing to come out 5 months into this new administration that definitely is trying to create a narrative that amplifies this corruption and bribery that we know that was happening at the city of Atlanta. But the ultimate question, is there any there with the former administration?
Well, real quickly, just to wrap up the point about the city council, that's a separate question of the council voting on contracts without having all the information about what had been subpoenaed. That in itself is a problem, isn't it?
Well, this is the misconception, and I want to be fully disclosed. I represent and have represented companies that have bid and won contracts recently and bid and lost contracts. Some of the contracts that were in the subpoena were contracts, yes, that the council had voted on. But some of the contracts that are in the subpoena are contracts that the council voted to extend while the new procurement process was happening. And so this, again, this narrative that there were contracts awarded that the council didn't know the subpoena existed, it's not all the way true, because a lot of those contracts, Dennis, have not been awarded because they have not received the proper signature from this mayor.
And I think the other part was, if I understand us correctly, there may not have been the proper vetting of the people who were actually bidding and getting, because if I read correctly, and it's all I know is to read, you know, the papers, is that there was some wives or husbands or partners or whatever that this thing was kind of commingled in some of this bid. And whether it's illegal or not, it looks bad. And I think that's what Darren's trying to say about Mayor Reed, is that, look, I mean, it looks bad. I mean, it actually looks bad. And if I was the mayor, and, you know,
talking about Mayor Reed now?
If I was Mayor Reed, I'd say, look, get everything out there. What do you want? And let's get it out there, because we see what's happened to President Trump. I mean, this was, what, a year anniversary today. And so they don't. Mayor Bottoms doesn't want this going on for a year.
A year anniversary since the Mueller investigation started.
Exactly, yes, sir.
A couple of quick hits here. Eagle's Landing had a new angle to it after Governor Deal signed the bills that would allow a vote on the city of Eagle's Landing. Bond rating agencies came in and said, okay, if Eagle's Landing takes land from Stockbridge, it's going to affect Stockbridge's bonds. And is this something, Congressman, I'll start with you, that could lend any weight to a legal case, or is it really just a warning shot across the bow, or is it just too late?
You know, in court, you never know what's going to happen. You never know how a judge is going to actually rule on something. I do think the fact that it is affected the bond rating is going to be an issue that they bring up.
Because then you could say the people in Stockbridge who weren't included in the area that was going to be part of Eagle's Landing didn't have a chance to vote on this, and this causes them harm because it affects the bond rating of the city.
That's correct.
That could be a legal argument, yeah, I suppose.
I'm not a lawyer. Well, I'm not a lawyer either, but my understanding is the city of Stockbridge has hired retained a very good lawyer, and I'm sure that this is going to be part of his defense.
Yeah, and I think that Governor Deal and his staff knew that it was inevitable that they were going to get some legal challenges from this decision. And then they were sort of warned and given information about the possible effects of the bond ratings and how the bonds may affect this decision negatively with the cities. But I think the other thing that's really interesting is that the governor, I think, really did this to give an opportunity for people to vote. And this is, again, all about local control. My issue with this particular bill is not so much that it gives local control to cities and citizens of the cities to vote on how they want to be governed and what city they want to live in. To me, it just creates a precedent that cities now can feel comfortable with de-annexing from a city. And so I go back to this. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be a very rainy, dark day if Buckhead woke up one morning and the citizens say, you know what, we really want to de-annex from the city of
and
Atlanta.
And former Atlanta Mayor Sam Massell, who has the kind of unofficial title of mayor of Buckhead, has said no way.
He has not just said no way, Dennis. He is adamantly opposed to this. But I have heard rumors for some of my friends who live in Buckhead, that there is rumblings. Now it's even more of a factor because of this recent signing of this bill. So I think that we as a state that always strives to be fair and give local control truly to local municipalities, we've got to really watch this particular issue closely to make sure that we don't enter into slippery slope.
And, you know, the other cities, Sandy Springs and the other cities, you never really heard anything about the bond ratings being affected of where they come. So,
well, they weren't taking existing cities. That's part of it, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, they were taking the county.
County,
I mean, everybody
had
the bond rating. So I do think that's going to be part of the defense because of it being brought up so quick.
Speaking of rumblings, after the Supreme Court ruled that states can legalize gambling within the borders of their states, Congressman, I'll start with you on this one. You have been in the legislature for many seasons where there have been pushes to bring horse racing and pari-mutuel betting, casino gambling in limited areas, all sorts of different proposals depending on what year it is. Do you think this will open the floodgates to more of those? Or is the issue of gambling less attractive in Georgia if it can be anywhere? I mean, would Georgia make that much?
I think both of those are true. I mean, I think what I was glad the Supreme Court did is say it's a state's rights issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of strengthening the 10th Amendment part that we've been looking for a long time for the court to actually say that. But, you know, if you're going to have if you're going to bring sports betting or gambling or whether it's casino, horse racing or whatever.
And then there's online, yeah, which is a whole different thing.
Well, sure. And, yeah, it's going to be. But you got Alabama that could do it. South Carolina could do it. North Carolina could do it. Florida. I mean, you know, Florida has gambling. So, I mean, it is going to make it not as much of what a crown jewel would have been for some state to do it, because now it is a national thing. And that's why New Jersey and Nevada, you know, I mean, New Jersey wanted it, and Nevada said, no, you know, we're the king out here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this Supreme Court decision just did, I think, a few things in Georgia. One, I think it becomes now a topic that everyone who's running for governor and even on the statewide ticket is going to be asked about. That's number one, because we know that we had a robust conversation the last two legislative sessions about resort casino gambling in Georgia. And I think that the Republicans are going to have to really be careful with this one, because we know that 70% of Georgians support casino gambling in the state. The second thing that it's done is that we got to pay very close attention on what's going to happen in New Jersey in the next couple months. Mm-hmm. Because as the congressman just pointed out, they are in a really big battle to try to be the new or sort of renewed Nevada when it comes to gambling. And I think the third thing is that how do you regulate it now? Like, if it's a state's rights issue.
Yeah, there really is no gambling commission here because there's no gambling.
So there's no
gambling.
How do
you set that up?
Commission. So now the state, maybe the federal members of Congress and even the cities, there may have to be some type of commission or authority created, not to handle it just for now, but with the anticipation that with a legislative session coming up with a new governor and a new entire constitutional officers, how do you now have a cohesive message around what are we going to do in Georgia to deal with gambling? Because one thing that is sure, we do have gambling in Georgia, and it's called the Georgia Lottery. But we do know with this new decision that it's only a matter of time that Georgia will have gambling in this state.
And in the lottery, the gambling would hurt the lottery.
That's what I was just going to ask.
And the lottery is the Hope funding. And mm-hmm. they've already had to cut it back, you know, some of the funding and stuff. But I'm telling you, you get the gambling here, and the lottery is definitely going to be hurt.
And you have two Democratic candidates for governor who have made Hope and Hope funding one of their key issues in their campaigns. If one of them should win and the issue of gambling comes up in the legislature, how will that governor or a Republican, should one of the Republicans win?
Well,
try to address that with Hope.
Well, how would the law be written as far as making sure the money could supplant what was lost with the lottery that goes towards education?
Would you dedicate it to education?
Yes.
Lots to be unpacked there. Quick final thought. The Atlanta Hawks have a new coach. Just to end on a lighter note, the Hawks have had one miserable season after another. Lately, they've been accused of losing games on purpose to get a better lottery pick. They jumped up a little bit in the lottery. They got a new coach. Downtown Atlanta, on the sports scene, Theron, definitely depends in part on the Hawks. So are you optimistic we're going to see a little more playoff basketball eventually?
I am. I think that the Hawks had a rebuilding year. You know, Coach Bud did a good job here. He was a person that a lot of us respected, but it was very clear that there was definitely some dissension amongst the organization and the players and the coach. And so, listen, at a time where the Braves are doing well, mm-hmm. and our
Atlanta United is on top of the MLS,
yeah.
too.
And so. our non-Super Bowl winning quarterback just got a $150 million deal with the Falcons. I think that it's only a matter of time that now the Hawks have got to get their acts together.
Anything, Congressman?
No, I mean, professional sports is, you know, it's turning into a real business now rather than sports. And I'd rather follow to college and to high school.
That's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. We have been joined by Democratic strategist Theron Johnson and former Georgia Congressman Republican Lynn Westmoreland, who's been doing his best impression of our Republican strategist Brian Robinson this week. Gentlemen, this was fun. We'll see you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis.
Our thanks to producer Sam Whitehead. And if you like this show, subscribe. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us. That's a great way to make sure other people can find us. We will be back in your feed and in your head soon with more nourishing political conversation. We'll look for you then.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.